Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, wait.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
Cameron, can you please look at me? Can you please look at me? Don't look that way. Are you there? Cameron, I cannot hear you. Your microphone has let us down. My joke now has fallen flat. Are you there? I heard you say something briefly at the beginning. You know what? I see. I'm. Let's see. Let's try this again. Da, 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 da. Hang in there, everybody. Cameron has a new microphone. And we're messing around with settings a little late.
Yeah, I apologize. Hitting the wrong button on the wrong thing.
So, Cameron, can you please look my way and not over there?
I just looked at the camera. Why can you see me? Stop doing that.
I'm doing a riff on the Vince McMahon, Austin Theory running gag throughout the show.
I'm going to go to my wall and kind of look at my monitor, kind of.
So, I've got like new acoustic tiles set up in my what used to be my office. Now it's like podcast studio / office, and you have a new microphone. This should be this should sound better than last time we were together.
Fantastic. People are telling me now the microphone's low as opposed to being loud. So everybody's just going to be disappointed. It's fine.
Well, as long as you're not overmodulating, all that can be fixed in post-production, although I don't know what that does for our live listeners. But nevertheless. All right, Cameron, so we've got a not unexpected triple threat match at day one with Big E defending against Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins. I want to talk about that. I want to talk about a lot of other things, including a reference to AEW and MJF. We'll get to that in a little bit, too. I thought that was very noteworthy. And a pretty attempt at being epic and perhaps successful at being epic return of Edge and return of Miz on a newsworthy and densely packed episode of Raw, even at 3 hours, including a 5-on-5 women's match. So but I do want to start with the Big E Kevin Owens match, the angle with Seth Rollins. And I thought it was clever. Vince McMahon might say, I should have seen it coming. It was predictable, not unexpected, and chastised me. Kind of feel like they were clever with Kevin Owens' character, that he's a liar, but not really. He's more manipulative. What did you think?
This is the most what are people saying outside of what we're saying that I've ever seen from a WWE show.
Yeah.
There were a lot of references to what is the outside world talking about? What do they care about? I think that Kevin Owens, it's easy, and I don't pretend not to be a part of this contingent. It's very easy to say that Kevin Owens is dialing it in, that Kevin Owens is not fully engaged, and it's a way to excuse some of the things that you see. And so Kevin Owens not being trustworthy is a way to say maybe he's resigning, maybe he's not, you'll never know. And so, yeah, they are playing into that as much as possible, but they are also making the WWE title very much his focus. And so, yeah, it operates on a number of levels to where faces don't trust him, heels don't trust him. And I think it plays into what they're doing with him right now. I don't know if it's a favor. I don't know if it's a long-term thing, but that absolutely does exist.
Do you consider him a tweener, a heel, or a babyface as of right now?
Tweener. Absolutely tweener. Because even with Big E, he's like, yo, I know I messed up. I know where I was, but that's not, you know, like I'm being genuine with you. The actions that I'm taking are caused by how you're reacting to me. It's not me doing that. Like, I've been pure, you felt away. Because, again, Big E referencing how he was with the New Day when Kofi won the title, like, I think that's a good callback. But, yeah, I classify him as a tweener because when everybody doesn't like you, but you have just enough reason to be like, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing, I think that works. I do think it works.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, I'm interested in what Kevin Owens is doing. I don't know how I feel, other than Seth is so intentionally obnoxious and grating, he's clearly meant to be the most heelish of anyone. And Kevin Owens, I mean, I'm watching Kevin Owens manipulate Seth into planting the seed with Adam Pearce and Sonya Deville to make this a triple threat match. I mean, I'm I saw that coming. Vince McMahon says, I should have seen it coming. Austin Theory didn't see it coming. I don't know how many fans saw it coming. Either way, I thought it was well done. And there was some, you know, it wasn't for sure, even if it was foreseeable, that that was a possibility. And I think that's good. I think you want Seth to be outsmarted and to throw a fit. And I thought that worked. And Seth on commentary, again, just, you know, protesting, but also pointing out, like, being manipulated briefly by Byron Saxton into thinking it would be a good thing if it's a triple threat. And then going, no, wait a second, my odds go down. And then Corey Graves making fun of WWE Math, which I enjoyed. Overall, I thought they told a good story throughout Raw to set up a match that on paper a few weeks ago felt weak. And I think WWE's done an effective job making KO Seth and Big E feel like this more dynamic triple threat match. I am, as a rule, against triple threat matches. As a fallback, because you didn't do your job making a one-on-one match seem compelling enough, this does feel, with Kevin Owens in this role, like a good occasion for it.
Yeah, I think that the best way to get an idea off is to put it in Adam Pearce's head and him not like it. Then Sonya Deville is like, you know what?
Yes.
Great idea. Like, her being an agent for whatever she's an agent for kind of works, because she goes against what he says, but it tends to still kind of stick, you know?
Right.
Yeah, and then again, like we said about Kevin Owens seems to be operating in this space where he's an absolute actual tweener, which they haven't had in a long time, and so both sides don't trust him, and it does tend to lend to the story they're telling. So, yeah, and again, probably the biggest thing about this, Kevin Owens, masterful in the ring. Seth Rollins, masterful in the ring. Big E, masterful in the ring. Like, you're going to get some really good action. And I think this is a way to have a new pay-per-view where you have a triple threat, where you can justify your face champion beating some of your really long-term established acts without it seeming like they did something they weren't supposed to do.
What's your prediction for – I mean, it's an early prediction. The match just got officially booked, but we kind of thought it might be coming. What do you think the finish is, most likely finish for that?
Yeah, Big E retains against Kevin Owens. And that way, Seth still has an in at the Rumble to have a match. And Kevin Owens, in my prediction, again, I don't know anything. I haven't talked to anybody about his specific situation, but it's a way he can get to his next goal.
I want to give people a warning. If they're taped the game, I don't know who would tape this game. But if you did record the game, so we're giving you a warning, fast forward if you're going to watch this Monday Night Football game. But is there a chance that Washington could still blow this? I was about to ask that before that touchdown pass, and now it could be happening.
There are 18 seconds left. I am born and bred from Upper Marlboro, Maryland, and I just let out an audible yell. Football season where my alma mater, the University of Texas, literally blew a game. When I was at the GCW show with Mox and Nick Gage, while I'm standing there watching with my friends, I am less than enthused, but best of luck to anybody who cares about this. It's okay.
All right, they're about to snap the ball.
I'm watching them snap.
Yeah, and I won't react.
Thank you for not reacting. Yes! Almost said the word I can't say. Great.
Almost.
I'm just going to say.
Now, I renew my question. Could they still
blow it? Is
there
a chance? Yes, absolutely. Dan Snyder owns. We can still lose anything.
Here's my prediction, okay?
Okay.
I think instead of kneeing the ball, the Redskins are going to run it into the end zone for a safety. They're going to prematurely celebrate by running it into the end zone for a safety and with 1 second left on the clock, and it's going to be a tie game.
When I tell you I'd place kick it as high as I possibly could, oh, my goodness. But enough about those bums.
Yeah, all right. Let's pause, introduce the show, and move on to some other topics here. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, November 29th, 2021. And we are live right after Monday Night Raw and in the closing minutes of the Washington football team against the Seattle Seahawks football team on ESPN Monday Night Football. So we're reacting a bit to that in real time here. I'm Wade Keller, host of the show, founder, editor of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, pwtorch.com, host of the Wade Keller podcast, the Wade Keller post shows, and a variety of VIP audio shows such as Focus on AEW, I've done 29 straight days of AEW-centric podcasts that have ranged on average about, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes each. For the entire month, that was my goal. On Sidekick, and Seattle retained.
Oh, my goodness. I just watched it in live.
Not over. So, great.
They have no timeout, so it's one play. But come on, guys.
A pass out of bounds and a field goal. They'll pass it, they'll get it out of bounds, and they'll hit a 64-yard field goal.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible.
So I do a bunch of VIP podcasts, too. You can find out details on our VIP benefits and become a subscriber at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. And also on Patreon at patreon.com/pwtorchvip. The other voice you hear is Cameron Hawkins from the PW Torch East Coast cast. You can also find him on Twitch. And every once in a while, you're on social media, Cam.
Every now and again, I tend to graze social media to see what they got going on. For sure. I love it. I love it. Wait, we got a flag, Wade. We got a flag. I need that.
Yes! On Seattle.
Woo! Okay. It's a nice better. Yeah, every once in a while I'm on social media. I had a very interesting conversation with one of our longtime East Coast cast contributors who's kind of been there from the jump. And it's been, I think, something to see, somebody on the outside end to watch the platform you helped provide myself, Travis, Dre, and Rich become what it is. So, again, I'm always appreciative. But, yeah, looking from the outside, and it's like, oh, those guys really did that. Like, it's really cool. So it's fun. It really is.
So tell people more about how they could find you in any of those places.
Absolutely. So first of all, the big deal, eastcoastcast.com, the East Coast Cast, Pro Wrestling Torch East Coast Cast, Travis Bryant host, myself and Rich Fan co-host, different segments of the show. I do the live show. Rich does the VIP show. It's gone so far, Wade. Now we are getting invited to host creative arts and media seminars for college kids on Twitch. It's been a real thing. But yeah, eastcoastcast.com. You can listen to us every Wednesday, 6:30 Eastern, 5:30 Central, talking about the week in wrestling. Again, Travis Bryant hosts, myself and Rich Van co-hosts. The coolest thing I'm a part of. I will be 36 in 2 weeks, and I have been technically a part of the show since I was 22. And so most of your kids are younger than my experience with the Torch. So, yeah, it's great. It's great.
Excellent. Did you mention how people can follow you on Twitter?
Sure. Twitter and Instagram at Seahawk, C-E-E-H-A-W-K. We just touched 12,200 followers. I can't explain it. I can, but it would sound really braggadocious. But it's super cool. we've been doing this a long time though. Again, Wade provided the platform. I think did enough with the information and the insights where it's grown to what it's been, and it's a great ride. It really is.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, cool. Well, let's give out the phone numbers, invite people to join us. I know this football game is way more exciting than it ought to have been in certain ways. But if you are just joining us, welcome. And if you've listened to us from the beginning of the show, you've gotten a lot of football and wrestling talk. Let's shift to talking wrestling with you. Our phone number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad, and a cool graphic will show up on the screen. It's a hand waving at us. It used to be like a green or red dot. I don't even remember, even though I stared at it for over 10 years. But they added a cool graphic. I'm excited about it. I don't care if Nick Barbati mocks me for being excited about it. It's different. So call us. We're light on calls tonight, so this is a good chance for you to jump on in if you aren't a normal caller, or jump on in if you are a regular caller but weren't sure you wanted to talk about the show. Either way, we have a lot to talk about, and another way you can join the show is on email, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. That is wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. Cam, it's over. You can exhale now.
I closed the app and everything. I'm great. I feel fantastic.
Good. All right, so let's begin with, I believe, William in San Diego is calling us. William, is this you?
Yes. Hey, how you guys doing?
Good. Thanks for calling. What'd you think of Rod tonight? What stood out?
To be honest, I kind of had it just in the background, so I didn't devote my entire attention to it. But some of the stuff that stood out to me, that video package for Bobby Lashley, I didn't catch Survivor Series live. I watched the playback version on Peacock, so I don't know if this also played live there, but I know that they played it also, at least in the playback version for Survivor Series. So, yeah, that's twice they played it, and it kind of hits, or it feels like it's kind of skewing a little babyface. They do the whole thing about him, you know, overcoming obstacles, and he's kind of smiling in the interview. So, yeah, what do you guys think of that?
Cameron, your thoughts?
The first, like, long-form article I ever wrote for The Torch was about Kofi Kingston's run-up to WrestleMania and the WWE title. And kind of what I stressed in that was, if you look at the timeline, probably starting with, let's say, Rocky Johnson and Tony Atlas, but you look at those guys, you look at Ahmed Johnson, you look at Ron Simmons, you look at The Rock, you go further with Lashley's first run, Shelton Benjamin, Bianca Belair. Regardless of what you think about Vince McMahon has always seen the importance of a black All-American champion. Always existed, right? And so I think that the heel Bobby Lashley run with the Hurt Business and in the Thunderdome era was so good, he knows he can reboot that. Because Lashley has that look, he has that ability, he's finally found his voice alongside MVP, and so I think that what they're doing with Damian Priest, I think Damian Priest might be a heel very, very soon. I think that you can have Lashley have another run with that U.S. title as like a big-time All-American babyface champion and run back him and Big E, both his faces. Like, I think that's a thing that can come up. So, yeah, I just think it's a way that, like, this has always leaned on the accomplishment of his athletes when he has them. And this is just that again. And they don't really need Bobby Lashley to be a heel right now. The Goldberg thing is done. You got Seth. You got KO. You got Austin Theory in the wings. You all of a sudden need more faces. So I think it's just a way of revitalizing a guy who isn't hurting but can help you on the babyface side.
Tell me some thoughts on Lashley's matches on Raw. They left him on Raw for a reason. I assume they planned for these, you know, 3.5-minute biographical, inspirational, look at this guy, an Army vet, amateur wrestler, works hard in the gym, videos. What is the lineup of opponents that intrigues you and that you think led to him staying on Raw and being portrayed this way, if that is where they're going with it?
I think him in Theory would be really good. I think that, like, that kid is really talented. As far as who's, like, on the heel side, I really think that pretty soon, like, they're going to realign Hurt Business with him as pure faces. Like, I think that's really
with MVP or MVP not part of the picture, or
I think still with MVP, but yeah. I think that one of the reasons you get Dolph and Robert Roode out of there now is because Lashley can throw those guys around and they'll let him. You know, Dolph. Somebody was asking about, like, what's the appeal of Dolph. I said, number one, he'll take anybody's move and sound like he got shot. Yes. Number two, all of his coworkers like him. You can't say that about everybody. Like, regardless of, like, political alignment, everybody speaks highly of the guy or supports him, at least publicly. You know what I mean? So that's two matchups you all of a sudden have for him. You know what I mean? You got Apollo sitting right there, who just came up short on a U.S. title match. Like, all those guys are there. And, again, I think what they're doing with Priest is – like, that mean streak he has, I think that flips here pretty soon, which is unfortunate because I think he was really working as a babyface. But I think that Lashley is going to be a priority as long as Lashley looks like Lashley. I really think that.
William, back to you. Any follow-up or an additional topic?
Yes. The Edge and Miz segment. I forgot what I was going to ask about that. So I'll move on to another one.
I know what you were going to ask about it, not to cut you off. I know exactly what you were going to ask about it. I feel like you were going to ask about WWE's all of a sudden willingness to lean in on AEW promos. If I'm wrong, tell me I'm wrong.
No, I think I was going to bring it up, but that wasn't going to be like my main topic. I feel like I had something other than that, but yeah, I'm completely blanking on it for some reason. But no, yeah, you guys can talk about that segment if you like. Maybe if you talk about it, whatever topic, yeah, specific topic I had about it will spring back to mind.
So when Edge said, you know, they dropped your name on another TV show, I was like, oh, wow, okay. I mean, AEW is going to be happy with that.
For
and,
sure.
You know, they're being mentioned on you know, WWE's, you know, former flagship, I guess, and by Big Name Edge. I also thought, is this going to backfire on Edge? If it looks like he's taking a dig at AEW, should babyfaces be doing that? AEW is in good graces with fans. I know there's people who are tribal about it, but in general, you know, if WWE wants to attract some AEW fans to stay with the product or return to it, you can generate a buzz by doing this, but you don't want to seem like you're bitter or scared or taking cheap shots, especially the irony of saying someone is bringing up someone else's name as a cheap shot, and you're the one, you know, also maybe trying to take a cheap shot at them. However, MJF and CM Punk, if Edge is framing CM Punk's comment as a cheap shot and fans like Punk, does that blow back on Edge with a negative reaction? And what did you think as you watched that, Cam, of if that could blow back on WWE or Edge, or it just worked because WWE's audience is loyal and they're not thinking about the specifics? They're just like, all right, now we're fighting back a little.
So because it's not my fault, Wade, because I'm not the one who did it. it's not a secret to people on social media that MJF and I have a relationship, right? It's just what it is. And I respect the kid's mind more than anything because I think he knows exactly where he wants to go, what he has to say to get there. My biggest issue is with Edge's promo, not so much drawing comparisons to Miz and MJF, because that's no secret. Like a lot of people have made that comparison to the two of them. My biggest thing about that promo is, why have Edge get on there and say that Miz is somehow complicit in Morrison not having a job anymore?
Yep.
That's nasty. And like Liv Morgan tonight saying that Becky's contract is the reason that Sarah Logan and Ruby Soho don't work there anymore. That's nasty because, one, it's not rooted in truth. That's the biggest thing, right? Two, why do you have baby phases talk about other people's money? I think that's disgusting. And, like, again, Edge is an all-time performer. Edge is a smart dude. Edge knows what will get you a reaction. But I think both of those promos were so disingenuous just based on the fact that with Liv Morgan specifically, and I think, granted, like, I want to say this first. This might have been her best night on TV. Promo-wise and in-ring-wise, she smoked it, right?
Yep.
However, you mean to tell me that, so you're saying that they don't work here because of somebody else, but your money was justified 3-4 months ago because it was. Like, it's crazy to bring that up because, like, if your fan base is mostly my age, mostly in their mid-30s, nobody's falling for that. It gets a great reaction in the arena because you're talking about something you're not supposed to be talking about, but it's so silly. Like, the idea that they can take record profits and fire somebody who you know is making a fraction of what this top star is making is just super silly. I think they did both strong babyface acts a very big disservice tonight. But no, again, to reel it in, will AEW love that for sure? Because being acknowledged in that way is a big deal. But I don't think it did. The only thing that hurt Edge was talking about somebody else's money, because I don't like it when anybody talks about somebody else's money that they're not either paying them or getting from them. I don't like that.
I think, yeah, the both of those segments were real notable, and it felt like they were inspired by the buzz generated by MJF and Punk. Mm-hmm. I think that they weren't as strong and they weren't as effective for some of the reasons you pointed out, but I thought they were compelling. And I think people would be interested in seeing more segments on Raw like that. But I think there was a level of, and I don't want to say tone deafness, because that might be overstating the misfires, but you've got to know your audience and know what a babyface comment really is. And if Edge is out there taking a dig at CM Punk and saying he's out there trying to get cheap heat, it actually makes it seem like Edge is coming to the rescue of Miz. And I know Edge said, I have some nice things to say about you, Miz, but it took you out of the moment that was pretty, like, on its own, strong enough. You've got Edge making his return. You have Miz interrupting and complaining, what about my press release? What about advertising me ahead of time? It is the first time we've seen Miz in a while. Morrison's gone. We're curious what that's going to be. Maryse comes out with Miz. It was a newsworthy segment. And that dig, even if it was aimed at Edge taking a shot at MJF more specifically, you're drawing attention to something that I think to a lot of people rang true. Mm-hmm. And it felt defensive and a babyface defending a company as opposed to fighting his own fight. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's the right approach for Edge, especially because, ironically, the point of the MJF Punk promo was MJF accusing Punk of being like John Cena, a company guy.
Yeah.
And Edge suddenly went from Edge is his own guy. He's worth, you know, whatever, $15 million. He's set for life. He wanted this so badly to come back. And I love the part about the small window, you know, and I took advantage of it. And, you know, Miz, when you're here, you're just here to forward your next project outside of WWE. And for me, the only project I care about is competing here in WWE and taking on all these people in the locker room who want to test themselves against me. Like, that was enough for me. That was a really good segment. So for a show like this, I'm kind of glad they made the comment. It gives us something to talk about. But I would have voted against it ahead of time for those reasons.
Yeah. And I think that, again, like, it gives and not that AEW needs motivation, but, like, knowing how a kid's mind kind of works, I know what that's going to do for an MJF. You know what I mean? Like, I know how that's going to light the fire under that kid. And I know it's going to get him to where he needs to go.
He's got to wake up a little bit, too. He's been pretty laid back lately, right?
I think, and again, I'm careful with the words I use, right? I wish, and wait, I'm not saying you don't, and you and I don't have these conversations, I think, on purpose, but, like, oh, he's so smart. And, like, there's other kids over there that are so smart, and I'm just like, oh, you get it, this is going to be great. And so, like, yeah, I just know, it's like, wait, did you watch the ESPN Michael Jordan documentary?
I did not.
Okay. So the best thing about that whole documentary is Michael Jordan makes up rivalries in his head. Mm-hmm. Like, he's like, and I took that personally from Mike, they didn't say anything about you. And a lot of these kids operate like that. Not like they're going to hate a guy, but they look at somebody across the water and like, yo, I see what you're doing. I want to do that and I want to do more. So it's going to be fun. Like, it's going to be a lot of fun. But yeah. Again, like you write Edge, who, and I'm not saying Edge isn't a company guy. Edge, we know him from working for one company basically his whole career. And that's not a knock. That's a good thing. Like, that means you kept, like, tenure with them. You have a good relationship with them, and that's all good. But that ain't the guy I want to hear talk about somebody else's money. I really, really, really don't like that. Because, like, knowing Edge, you probably got a relationship with Morrison and Taya. Y'all are probably cool. Like, you and Edge being the guy he is, he might have called them before the segment like, yo, just so you know, this is what we're talking about. But, like, it just doesn't – I don't know who the audience is for that, who is supposed to say, this makes me think better of you because you said this. Because if you're in your 30s and you work at a career, when somebody gets fired or hired, you're not looking at the man across from you saying you're the reason – why they are or are not here. Like, that's nasty. Nobody operates like that. And so it just seems so cartoonish, but it also seems to come from a place where Vince McMahon has never been an employee. He's been a boss the whole time. So you don't know how employee conversations go. And so this is what we got. I don't like it.
Let's go back to William for any follow-up maybe that reminded him of what he was going to ask about.
Yes, I do remember, but... Yeah, you guys brought up the whole thing about Edge and Liv referencing or alluding to all the recent cuts and kind of blaming their fellow, I guess, coworkers. And yeah, that's, I don't know. I watched that and it's kind of gross because they're employees. And instead of like saying, yeah, I should be getting paid, we should all be getting paid as much as Becky, or we should all be getting benefits and not having to pay for our own lodging or and travel or whatever, and looking at all the executives and CEOs giving themselves pay raises and bragging about the best financial quarter WWE has ever had or whatever. They're looking at each other on live TV and written to say, no, actually, it's your fault that these people that these wrestlers that people like are getting fired. Don't look at Vince and Nick Khan and all these guys stacking their pockets with full of money. It's your fault, Becky. You who you like me put your body on the line every night and are treated as an independent co-worker, independent contractor. Whatever. It's just kind of very.
No, it's a great point. Hang on one sec, because I do want to follow up with Cam on that one, if you are okay with that, William.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I wonder if, do you think Vince McMahon's motivation, because I've said this a lot over the years, a lot of what you see on TV is reflective of whatever's bugging Vince McMahon. I mean, this goes back to multiple examples in the 90s. And some people are like, oh, you're reading too much into it. No, there's a pattern there. Talk to people behind the scenes. Stuff makes air that's eating at Vince McMahon, and it manifests in terms of storylines. And so is Vince tired of taking heat for laying off so many wrestlers? Because to me, if WWE wants to lay off wrestlers, that's their right as a company. Like, I mean, they've got to hire people. Or they've got to let people go if they're going to hire new people. AEW is going to have to face that someday. You know, they're going to have to let some people go in order to replenish and add some people that they think are better bets to invest in or can help them draw more ratings or there are better locker room influences or harder workers or more hungry, whatever it is. Every company's going to do that, especially an entertainment company. It's not a charitable organization. It's not they're not children who get participation trophies and jobs for life. So if WWE just said, hey, we let people go who we don't think are worth the money we're paying them, and we're going to bring other people in, and we're going to pay them instead. That's totally their right. But so I can live with that. I really can't. I mean, they can't keep everybody they've ever hired. They have so little goodwill with their fan base that people lash out at them for that because of other things such as, if you're taking Saudi Arabia money, do you really need to cut these people, especially during a pandemic? Like, that's the stuff. So during record revenues, as William says, It feels dirty and just grimy to somehow try to create a narrative on TV that it's these damn big name wrestlers who drive a hard bargain in contract negotiations that are the reason we had to let 50 wrestlers go who collectively, you know, are earning about what your raise was. Like, that's the message. And it does feel like, really, as William says, with all your the private jets and the homes and the bonuses and the great grandkids who are going to be set for life without lifting a finger. And you're going to sit there and create this narrative on TV that we're supposed to resent Miz and Becky for making a lot of money after all the years they put in. If that's what Vince is going for, I think it will backfire. In addition to the other reasons, I thought it was a bad idea because I thought it was the weakest part of Liv's promo. It put sympathy on Becky because people, if they don't like what Becky says about their hockey team, they respect the hell out of her. And they think she should get what she can get. And that should have nothing to do with other people getting laid off or earning a fraction of her pay.
Yeah, I hate that I drew attention to the fact that they had Liv say something that was clearly a company line that had nothing to do with being a babyface. And people were like, yo, like, don't knock what Liv is doing. I'm like, I'm not knocking what Liv is doing. I'm knocking what was wrote for Liv. Like, Liv's smashed it all night.
And that's implied. Like, I mean, we know that.
Well, we know that, but Stan Twitter culture is a different animal, right? No, for sure. It was like, no, I'm not knocking Liv at all. Liv smoked it all night in promos and in the ring. But, yeah, they set her up to say something that is disingenuous that she knows isn't true. And that's unfortunate. And I want to say this really quickly. So an AEW wrestler who is not MJF, we hung out like a week ago, And
again, never mind.
The conversation was like, hey, I was supposed to be doing X, Y, and Z the last 6 months. That got changed because of who came in. And so I want to tell anybody listening, because this is the biggest audience that I'll have. I want to tell you this. I know you want everybody to go to AEW. I know the sexy thing is to say, oh, they're not with this company anymore. I can't wait till AEW gets them. The reason you liked AEW and the people you liked in AEW are getting pushed to the back burner because you want everybody else there. I'm not saying that's anybody's fault. I'm saying that's the nature of wrestling. So slow down. Let the people that you want, that you already like, do their thing. Trust me. That's what you want. But it's, again, Becky Lynch made herself out to be a big star. And I hope that doesn't sound facetious. Like, she did the work and had great moments and, like, really, like, smoked it. And when you all of a sudden make her out to be all I want is money and other people can't work here because I work here, that's nasty. Like, you're perpetuating a system that won't let your stars be stars. Okay?
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying. And when we talk about the amount of money brought in, like, again, a company can do whatever they want, but you do not put it in the hands of your baby faces to say that other people are taking money out of other people's pockets when Becky Lynch don't write checks. Like, essentially what she's really saying is, you fans wanted Becky Lynch so bad that my friends can't work here. They won't go that extra step.
Yeah.
But that's what she's telling you, but you want to pop in the moment. Again, a good line is a good line, but this is not – somebody making so much money is not a reason to do this, because guess what? Sami Zayn is not going to come out on SmackDown and say, hey, Brock, you're the reason that Adam Cole and Xavier Woods couldn't get Twitch money. They'll never say that.
Right.
Never, ever, ever, ever. Now, will they say that Brock is hogging a spot? For sure, because people respond to that different. But they won't tell you Brock is taking money out of people's pockets, but they'll do that with the other division. And you can read into that what you will. And I'm not saying they didn't knock Miz, but they basically called Miz a bad friend. They called Becky a bad employee.
Yeah.
What is a bad employee? Like, what does that mean? What are you really saying? Bad attitude. Same thing they were saying about Charlotte. Like, you got to read between the lines. Like, they're putting it right there in your face and what they think they can tell you, what they can get away with. It's right there.
All right, William, now over to you.
Yeah, I hate to stay on that topic ad nauseum, but...
That's okay.
Yeah, it would be like if all of a sudden the company I work for, they started laying off, I don't know, 10, 15 people, a lot of who my friends would, and then all of a sudden I started looking to my other coworkers and going like, Sarah, why didn't you take a paycheck so that you could save all of my friends from getting fired? And meanwhile, the CEO is getting a bonus, and Sarah, you know, she depends on that income to pay for her new family and her new home that she's told me to buy. And whatever, I'll just move on. I wanted to talk also about, I guess as long as we're kind of on this topic or we touch a little on it, Becky Lynch and Liv Morgan. I'm kind of looking ahead, and we kind of have Lynch feud that's kind of already been done with, or at least maybe they'll revisit it eventually, but kind of doing postmortem at the moment as much as you can. It kind of feels like they're not doing much with Bianca, and if the whole purpose of Becky turning heel is that you're going to elevate all these baby faces, I don't know that they're really going to accomplish that, because Becky's obviously going to beat Liv, and I don't have much faith that after that they're going to do much with Liv. And it's that same problem. It's not a female-only problem. They had that problem also with Roman. Roman would, quote-unquote, elevate all these other opponents, Cesaro, Kevin Owens, the list goes on. And after Roman was done with them, they would just kind of move aside and do nothing. So, is it really worth it to turn Becky heel if no one's really getting elevated?
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be too fatalistic about the fact that Liv is going to come out of this better. She might not come out of it, you know, as a perennial top-tier star, although tonight's performance, some content aside, I thought showed she can do more. By the way, I was real critical of her like a month or so ago about her ring entrance. It looked like she was trying to score points with guys at a wet t-shirt contest the way that she just I don't want to phrase it too harshly, but just the way she carried herself coming out to the ring, I felt was 15 years out of date and beneath her. And she's adjusted to now, the way she walked to the ring tonight was a serious athlete. Yeah, her cleavage is hanging out, but a serious athlete on a mission who's focused not on titillating men in the crowd, but a mission to be an athlete who wants to sign a contract and elevate her career. And I get it's pro wrestling, and there's a time and a place for some characters to be that, but when you're trying to elevate yourself to being a serious athlete, taking on somebody of Becky's stature, don't look like you're just trying to titillate the guys in the crowd. So I thought she found a lane that works for her, where she let her appearance and sexiness speak for itself without overdoing it in a way that I felt was just, yeah, way over.
So not like Mandy Rose is what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
I mean,
Mandy Rose is so egregious. Like they got rid of that camera last week. It was insane how they were shooting her. Like,
yeah.
Okay.
Well, it was like the beautiful people in TNA, you know, yeah. And it was like, you know, they would rub the ropes and then the announcers would, you know, go crazy. It was just like, it just feels like how desperate and pathetic do you think your audience is that they can't appreciate a woman if they're attracted to them in that way without them acting that cartoonishly overtly about it? There's a professionalism to Liz's sexiness tonight. And I want to compliment that because it's a big step in the right direction. But everything about her tonight was good. I am not fatalistic about her being a bigger star after this. The key for WWE is to make sure that they are planning now for what she does next. And, you know, like Bianca Belair, and I wanted to ask you about this, Cameron. I made a mental note as I was watching this to bring it up on the show. You know, her feud right now appears to be Doudrop. And, you know, Doudrop just turned heel, and she hasn't been defined down yet. She you know, won up Eva Marie. And so, you know, Doudrop still has room to define herself. But it's not like this huge step down to be facing Doudrop. But they have to make sure that doesn't feel like they've just sort of put her off to the side in this lower card feud. They have to look like they're putting time into making that feud feel relevant, personal, on a professional level or personal level, make it feel relevant. Are they doing a good enough job with that yet, or does it seem like Belair's going to be damaged by seeming like you're not one of the two women we're focusing on right now?
So the thing with Bianca and Big E, too, so they've kind of been on, like, the black media run, for lack of a better way of saying it. Like, Bianca and Tiz did Hot 97 a few weeks ago. Big E did The Breakfast Club. And those are, like, the two biggest black media outlets that exist internet-wise, right? And so they're kind of doing this thing where, and of course, to a lesser extent with Big E because he's the champion, but with Bianca, they're like, okay, we've had you with the title. We want to endear you to as many audiences as we think will relate to you so we can just heat you back up whenever. Like, I think that we've talked about this a few times, Wade. Like, Naomi is made. Right? Like, Naomi is not in a main event. Naomi's not competing for the title. Naomi's in this thing with Sonya that really has to be explained, but they can heat Naomi up whenever. Right? So, and all due respect to Naomi, Naomi ain't Bianca, in that nobody's Bianca, in that this athleticism, this ability to talk to people, like, it's just super unique. So, even with Doudrop, again, they put Cena in stuff sometimes where the storyline is just that the guy's bigger than you, and can you pick him up? And he always came through. So, again, it's just going to be one KOD on Doudrop that's going to get people reinvested in Bianca, and she'll be able to be whatever they want to. Like, one of the advantages that AEW is establishing over WWE, why don't we have a secondary women's title? Like, not two equal titles, but a secondary title to where – and again, I think Jade Cargill is made for it, if not Thunder Rosa, but it's like, let's have this other thing that can be done to where we can have technically two different divisions, right? But no, I don't think Bianca's going to be hurt in that I think that she is such a strong talent, whatever she's doing, they'll follow. But yeah, I'm telling you, one power move, because I think tonight, I think she had Tamina in the KOD and they pulled it down. You don't have a lot of women who are baby faces, and they missed this with Caitlyn. They missed this with Dana Brooke, who can do that power thing to where you're like, oh, that sticks with me. I'm the little girl who wants to be strong. I see what she's doing. I want to do that.
William, anything else from you? And then Scott, Kyle, and Greg, hold tight. We'll get to you guys next. William.
Yes. You kind of cut out there for a second, so I didn't catch that question. Sorry.
Oh, I just am throwing to you for any final topic or question.
Oh, okay. Awesome Theory. I think the fact that he's getting so much TV time or screen time with Vince McMahon is something that obviously is noteworthy. What do you guys think this means for his future? And do you think he's just kind of the hot toy of the week, and maybe 2 months from now he'll be chasing the 24/7 championship, or is this a sign of good things to come for him?
I think it's a sign of good things to come for him, but he, you know, still could screw up. I mean, he's no question the shiny new toy. I think I first heard that term when John Pierre-Marini, the ex-WWE creative team member, was on the show a dozen years ago or 11 years ago and talked about how Sheamus, you know, for a while was a shiny new toy and got this huge push, and Vince was really interested in him, and he's had many shiny new toys since then. Austin Theory, definitely. But Austin's getting really special treatment because Vince, the time that Vince is comfortable being on TV, which is, you know, sitting at a desk in pre-recorded segments, adding some McMahon star power and gravitas to a show that needs some viewers to compete in a variety of ways, including with AEW and the demographics. Austin Theory is someone who Vince likes performing with. And Austin showed as part of the way with the Garganos that he has good comedic timing and is playing up a similar role to what he did. I think this is entertaining, and I'm intrigued with where they're going with it. I don't know, like, if, I mean, Austin Theory could still screw it up somehow, and it might be legitimately not making enough eye contact with Vince McMahon behind the scenes, or making too much eye contact with Vince McMahon behind the scenes. You have to be very careful. I do love that Vince McMahon does seem to have a sense of humor about what he is like behind the scenes. It's not like somebody suggested this and he said, yeah, I'll do that, not realizing that's how people feel about him. But I think there is a little bit of a succession Tom and Greg dynamic here between them that is fun to watch. So, Cameron, what do you think?
Well, first of all, Macaulay Culkin's little brother is my favorite thing ever. Why is he so
good? Macaulay is his older brother.
Okay. He switched.
I think we're flipping. I mean, I Macaulay's great. He's a wrestling fan. I met him at All In and all that, but I'm sorry. Kieran is.
I'm behind on the show, but the episode with him and the softball team, that did it. I was like, okay, I get it. This kid's great, right? Austin Theory. I said it tonight. I was like, oh, so he's like SmackDown era clean face Drew, in that this is the young guy we think can get us to the next spot. Like, yeah. And again, he's really good, has a great look. It's really weird that like a white kid has the best fade on all of WWE television, but it's not my business. That's the barber's business. But yeah, big, strong, talented. We'll see how long they're invested in him, man, because he is really, really good. He beat the allegations, apparently. Congratulations, kid, whatever. But what is he, like 24? Like,
yeah,
he's substantially, like,
yeah,
young.
Yeah.
The thing I don't know about him is, like, everybody else who was in that spot had a mean streak to them. And when I say mean streak, not just I can beat you up, but I can hear Austin being mean. I can hear Rock being mean, Triple H being mean, Angle being mean, Orton being mean, Edge being mean. I don't know if I feel that way about him. You know, I don't know if that's in him.
He's got the Kurt. I think Vince sees the Kurt Angle acting range mm-hmm. in Austin Theory for comedy. Someone fun to play off of. But yeah. you're right. Angle had the Olympic gold medal background and yeah. could get serious. And I argue
he could beat everybody up. That's the thing. Like yeah. there's not anybody on that roster you were like, oh, Kurt Angle can't beat them up. That's different. That's not no shade to Austin, but it's like it's a different thing. You know what I mean? Like, Kurt Angle being fun was fun because you knew it could flip at any moment.
Yeah, and that is Austin Theory going to be more Miz, or is he going to be what MJF has worked really hard to do, which is bring credibility.
Really go.
Like, you can see MJF is very cognizant of the need to make sure he's not seen as the player coach, or, you know, like Roddy, I mean, Roddy Piper's a great model for this because Piper could talk and sometimes he aligned with people bigger than him, but it was about him. And he was the badass who wasn't going to do jobs. And it's fun to watch part of the great – what's fun about pro wrestling, no matter how much you're down on a product or a promotion at any given time, is you can renew interest, I think. And I know I'm most interested – and perhaps because of the job that I have, you know, there's a reason for that beyond just enjoying the viewing. But I like wrestlers on journeys. I like to see people getting opportunities. And I hate that word just got ruined by WWE. But I like that people get opportunities and to see what they do with it. And right now we're getting that with a variety of people on television. Liv Morgan, Austin Theory. It's not the same people who have been defined down to a certain spot facing each other and back and forth wins and losses. There's some new stuff happening. And that's a lot of fun. Now, you got to have pros being pros, doing great work at the same time, blended into the show for it to be worth it. Otherwise, you get NXT 2.0, they got pros being blended into the show, too, with all due respect to Tommaso Ciampa and company. So, it's interesting. Anyway, anything you want to quickly follow up on there, Cam? I want to get to our other callers, too.
No, right there with it. I think he's making great points. Nothing to follow up on. Like, there's a youth movement. I just don't want them to take these kids and have them toe the company line so hard that they can't really make it. Again, your biggest stars, your Rocks, your Austins, your Triple H's made it that way because they worked with what the company was talking about. And even John Cena, even though it happened later when he started wearing T-shirts instead of jerseys, what got him there was not being down with what the company said. So I hope they keep that in line.
All right. William, any closing words from you?
No, I think you guys made a good comparison with Drew McIntyre. That's kind of the chosen one. That's kind of also the vibe I was getting from that whole segment. And also kind of he has kind of an air of like a young Randy Orton. So, you know, I'm also kind of hopeful that maybe he will break out a little and not just be like the next Miz mid-card stuck. Mm-hmm. Virtually mid-card forever or whatever.
That is, it's going to determine how much money he makes. I mean, by the way, Miz is doing very well for himself. And Austin has a lot going for him, but there is a high bar with him and you can see it right away with it, given what WWE and Vince McMahon in particular look for. And he's got some talent to go along with that initial appeal, just visually, aesthetically, of what Vince looks for. And there's people who look as good as Austin Theory who don't get TV time with Vince McMahon like he's gotten the last couple of weeks. Vince sees something in him. And say what you will about Vince, and I don't like to relate it to age because I think a lot of his flaws people attribute to his age, and I think a lot of his flaws were prevalent in the mid-80s. So they're the same proclivities that were there then. So, but he's not an idiot either, and he sees something in Austin Theory, and that's okay. that's worth something.
100%.
Cool. Thanks, William. I'm glad you called. Good long conversation with you.
Thank you. Thank you guys for taking the call. Have a good one.
Yep. You
take care.
All right. We'll go to Scott in Long Island next, and then Kyle and Greg are on deck in the batter circle. Scott, good to hear from you again. How's it going?
On Long Island, Wade. On Long Island. That's a big thing. We're not in Long Island. We're on Long Island.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Graves got it right.
I'm glad that you clarified.
Graves got it right.
I can imagine
night.
That being.
Graves got it right all night.
Yep.
Well, when you live here, that's the thing. Graves got it all night. He got it right. Jimmy Smith didn't get it right one time. I was just like gripping. But it's shout out to the football team, by the way, because the Jets own that Seattle first. Shout out Jamal Adams. I hope you have fun on a different 3-8 football team. So that was fun to see.
You know how scarred I was, like Jamal Adams getting an interception. I was like, well, we're losing because he doesn't even do that.
Yeah, exactly. I saw him do that, and I was like, really? Like, they're going to win, and he's going to get a pick. I don't like this night at all. But, no, that was good to see. And of course, you know, Becky, you know, I love Becky. She's a heel to me, though. You know, she's gonna diss my Isles in a brand-new arena, how they haven't won, and the whole team has COVID. You know, I'll boo her anytime. And you know what it made me think of? I mean, I had a chance to go tonight. I had actually – you know, not a bragging thing, but like I had a chance to go with free tickets and they were kind of giving them away. It went from, I think, buy one, get one to this afternoon. I heard one of my friends told me it was buy one, get two. They were really trying to give them away. I didn't
ticket sales were really slow for this event and way behind AEW in that same building. Which is weird. Cause usually the first time in a new, first time in a new building, usually people just want to be in it to see their favorite sport or event. Go ahead, Scott.
Yeah, exactly. Like a lot of, you know, the Islanders have only played 4 games and there's been 1 concert. So literally just opened. So, but AEW, MJF is shoot from about 10 minutes away. I met him a long time ago with Matt Cardona and Brian Meyer, like those guys, and they're all Long Island guys from, we're all 10 minutes away from each other. I can't wait to see how he's going to get just booed like crazy. Because deep down, it's the only place on earth where he can get cheered, and he's going to get booed like crazy. And I just can't wait to see how he does it. So I just wanted to bring that up because when Becky brought up the Islanders, I'm like, yeah, that's an easy one, obviously, but he's going to pull it off and it's going to be masterful. So I know that's next Wednesday, but I just can't wait to see it.
No, one of my favorite things, and I'm not a super fan of the guy, but when Alberto Del Rio was talking about how he imports his help from Canada, I was like, okay, like this is a guy who gets it. Like, of course, like MJF is going to say that thing in the place where he's from to make everybody mad. It's going to be great. Like, yeah, it's going to be that. Again, some people just get it. And it makes sense outside looking in, but we also aren't a bunch of people who can do 450 splashes and military presses. And so it doesn't resonate for everybody. That kid gets it. It's going to be a lot of fun to see that for sure.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, like as for the show, and I was switching off between the football game and, you know, the show, you know what, like, first of all, like, you guys were saying, like, is there anything, like, left for, you know, after this for Liv? The truth is, I don't think so. I, like, deep down, if I asked you two, I would guess you would both say probably not. I think with those kind of things and those kind of, you know, that kind of talent, you really need something to organically happen, like it happened to Becky, ironically. And then something else has to kind of take off and who knows, and then maybe Vince gets involved and he goes with it and something like that. But other than that, you know, look at Rhea Ripley right now, coming out of like a dumb tag team. And what is she, 24, 25? Yeah, there's time to make it right. But, you know, if 2 years from now she got cut, would you be totally shocked? I wouldn't. You know, like it's just a very weird, like, thing where they don't have anything planned. It just seems like backstage, I'm sure Becky wants to put Liv over and make sure everything's cool and try her best, but yeah, maybe it'll work this month and then I don't see anything. What do you guys think about that?
Cameron, what do you think?
I think I'm literally reacting to something right now as we're talking about it, because somebody quoted her line from that promo that said, "Your big, fat, greedy contract is the reason my friends are gone. Live to Becky." Mm-hmm. And my tweet was, "Blaming coworkers for salary decisions as a babyface is, well, some BS." See, wait, I remember what show we were on. It's some BS, but it had the desired reaction because people did pop for it. Somebody tweeted me, "Are fans that dumb?" And my reaction, I think, was tapered, and I hope I'm saying this in the way it should be said. I would suggest most fans aren't salaried, right? And it's no shame. Like, most jobs are hourly jobs. They just are, right? or people work for themselves, but most jobs aren't, okay, we're going to pay you this much, whether you show up or you don't, right? So I think that as somebody who, I don't know, let's say you work at Home Depot. That's like my new thing because like I'm actually an old man now. Let's say you work at Home Depot and you work in the lumber aisle and your man works in the light bulbs aisle. And he wants too much money, so he has to go so they can pay you a couple of extra dollars. You might be okay with it. You might not. But, no, I just think that it's a situation where they felt like they were addressing the uninformed and that it would not hurt the people who were saying the lines. And I don't claim to be the majority on this. I just really don't like it because I know what they're actually saying. That's my biggest thing. So I think that Liv, outside of the promo, again, had her best showing physically tonight. I think that, one, Liv has a great look that they really haven't had before. I understand she's blonde. I understand she's good looking, but the way she presents herself is a little bit different, right? And without getting into like a whole bunch of detail, the people who support Liv and like really like her and rock with her are maybe a demographic people don't really know. So I think she really has a shot at being good. They just can't have her be company line person because you're going against the thing you actually want to push.
How would you describe Liv Morgan's character or ideal portrayal of her character once it kind of establishes itself at this level?
I think one thing they did, they gave Liv Morgan music that is way more in tune with who I think her audience is, right? I think Liv Morgan, for the first time in a long time, is the character that is supposed to appeal.
Can't be over-modulating a bit.
I'm sorry, I have to lean back.
Yep, there you go.
I think, again, this might, it costs too much money. I don't know what to do. I think she is the character who is supposed to appeal to the under 25 crowd. I don't know who on the roster other than her is really supposed to do that. Like Bianca, I think so. But everybody else is just meant to be what your audience is. I think she's the one for the young people. And like,
and why? What is it about her that makes her for the young people?
Her music, number one.
Yeah.
Like, and it's brand new, right? But also, somebody who's prominent on social media, who's a friend of hers, who has a big account, is like a young black woman firmly entrenched in the hip-hop community. And so I was like, okay, that's where that relationship comes from. I get it. You gotta remember, when Liv was in NXT, Liv was in like Jordans and Air Force Ones every week. And so they kind of dialed away from that. But who you are early at NXT, to me, tells me a lot about your personality. And so
yeah.
I think she's like that young kid, hip-hop festival person who they shied away from a little bit to make her fit in more with her group. But, yeah, like she's the young kid. And granted, like, and this is not a knock to anybody else on the roster, but who looks younger than Liv Morgan? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
She absolutely has a youthful look. And so I think she is who they mean to draw in a new younger audience. I think she's doing just a fine job. But again, I would never let my person who, and again, Liv probably made more money than me. Well, not in a lifetime. I've been old for a long time. But I wouldn't let my new money act talk about old money. I wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Just never.
All right, Scott, back to you.
Yeah, that's a good point. I just want to comment two more things. So one, it's weird that you have Edge, Bryan Danielson, who when you think of his absolute worst health stuff in the middle of his retirement, and Christian, who at the same time you're like, well, he's never coming back, and all three are active, but then Edge comes back and you're like, all right, we'll set up a program with Miz. It's like, I get it's December and there's no pay-per-view until the day one thing, and he's an easy guy to work with and he's good on the mic and all that. I get that, but like he said it himself and it's definitely true. Like his window's not big. You know, maybe that's the guy that Austin Theory should be working, or maybe there's a different guy you could put Edge over to get his steam back, or, you know, let him put over a younger guy. Him versus The Miz doesn't do anything for me.
I'm more okay with it, but I really do get your points. And you know, like, it was having Miz interrupt, it just sort of, it worked in terms of, oh, you make a big deal out of Edge. What about me? What about me? And so it had, it clicked in a few ways, but there is that thing about Edge talking in that promo about there's so many guys who want to prove themselves against him. And it's like, Miz is made, Edge is made. They're both worth, you know, I'm sure they're worth $10, $20 million in their bank account. Like, what do they have to prove to each other at this point? You know, yes, you can say, well, Edge is wrestling because he loves it, not for the money, and Miz is wrestling so he can, you know, parlay that into becoming more famous outside of wrestling. I'm not sure how much that taps into the audience that WWE is trying to attract to fill a building like the arena tonight that had a lot of empty seats that were not sold, that could have been sold. So Edge against a young upstart feels fresher and feels like you're investing more in the future. Now, the question is, how many of those people are on the roster beyond Austin Theory? And if they get to Austin Theory, they just do, like you say, kind of a December, you know, romance with Miz and Edge, and then they move on quickly. I'm still okay with that. If Miz and Edge are still feuding at WrestleMania, I got a problem with that. Cameron, what do you think?
Yeah, I think that two of the biggest things that AEW did was signing Lee Moriarty and Daniel Garcia. And not just signing them to stash them away, but signing them to be like, you might lose to our top guys, but you're going to look great against them. So if we got to get back to you in 6 months, you're the guys,
yeah.
You know?
And in the meantime, in the meantime, you'll be in some main events and you'll be getting notoriety and we'll be building you up even with your losses.
100%. 100%. Yeah, I'm right there with you. That's exactly the point I'm making. Like, you have these kids who are considered the best technical wrestlers who nobody's ever seen, right? And again, Austin Theory, I'm not knocking the kid's talent. He's clearly very, very, very good. But, you know, Austin Theory has the Evolve resume, but he doesn't have, oh, I got this great match I saw him with at GCW with Eddie Kingston that was just the thing. You know what I mean? Like, it's different. And so Edge can talk about people chomping at the bit, but everybody chomping at the bit already been to the dentist. These aren't new teeth. They're just not. And it kind of takes away from what he's saying. Like, okay, how do you change it? What if Edge started cutting that promo and Carmelo Hayes came out? It's different because you're literally, you're speaking truth to power. Like, Miz is 40, and God bless him, Miz is taking care of his body. He's had, what, two injuries in 15 years?
Yeah.
Like, that, there's a lot to be said about that, but what you're trying to speak into existence doesn't exist like it does on the other side because we know these aren't young and upcoming and hungry talents. Like, Miz could have the best match you've ever seen with Edge, and it will not change Miz's legacy because you either love Miz and what he's done and respect it on like a meta level, or you think he hasn't done enough. One match will not change that. So, yeah, I think that if you want – here's the other thing I think, though. I think that Edge, for everything he's done, a couple of years ago, Wade, I think it was you telling me how – you know, when Randy Orton went into the match with Daniel Bryan, he was like, yo, here are the things I can't do. You can't hit me here. You can't drop me here. And not that that's a problem because that's how you do longevity, but Edge is also that. Like, Edge is not going to get in there with the baddest young guy going. You will never, ever, ever, and I will give you $5, no more, but $5. If you ever see Edge and Braun Breaker, in the ring together, $5 on me. Maybe you get breakfast on me. You're not going to see it because that's not the business that they're in. Austin Theory is both young and established enough through matches and through promos to where they're comfortable with him. But, yeah, you're not going to see real young guy versus real old guy on the main roster level. You're just not going to see it.
Scott, back to you.
And, yeah, my final topic. So Rollins has been my favorite, I guess, like WWE talent since he kind of entered, I don't know, maybe I saw him at NXT kind of early, and I just gravitated towards his in-ring style, and I understand a lot of people didn't like his babyface stuff, but I thought his heel run and the WrestleMania run and the money and all that's fantastic, and like, you know, right now I think he's actually doing a very good job. But if him and Becky really want to, like, really get booed, I would love to them. Like, I understand that he said in the past, like, when they did work together, it was very, like, uncomfortable, and he didn't like it, and maybe she didn't like it, but they're playing the same character, dressing up, like, with the giant coats and the huge sunglasses, and their segments are always back-to-back. If you notice, Seth started what was right after Seth leave, who comes out? Becky comes out with the same crazy jacket and the glasses. Like, if they want to ever lean into that and kind of just, you don't have to go do mixed tags every night, but just lean into the fact that other people know that they're married and have a kid. Like, it's okay to pull that off. Like, you know, like, listen, if you want to put Beth Phoenix in the Miz thing and have Maryse active, like, you know, I'm not going to be into it, but whatever. That, I think the Seth and Becky thing would be more interesting. But I mean, I truly think that he's doing a really good job. And then I guess the last thing, I guess Owens is signed past January 1st if he's in that match. And there are, you know, I want all these guys to get paid and make their money, and whatever he decides to do, fine. You know, right now I find myself way more into what AEW is doing than what WWE. It's more stagnant and stuff. But he's one guy I would love to see just go on a massive tear, because I just feel like Tony Khan would have a lot of fun, and he'd be with his boys and he'd have fun. And I don't want to see him for another couple of years doing what he's doing. I mean, it's good. I just think he could go on like a Bryan Danielson type crazy run in AEW where everyone's talking about him, and I think he deserves that. So I'll leave you with that stuff, and I'll keep listening.
Thanks, Scott. Appreciate it. Yeah, very much. I think Scott might have talked in what he said, dropped the possibility of Beth Phoenix and Edge against Miz and Maryse, perhaps, given that WWE feuds last a lot longer than we ever think they are going to and should. That could actually end up being a WrestleMania match. It could also be blown off at the Royal Rumble or on a special episode for Raw. But I wouldn't be shocked if we see something like that. I don't know where Beth's head is at as far as that goes. But a number of points there, Cameron. What do you have to say about that?
On the Hot 97 interview with Bianca and Montez, they asked Bianca what her dream match was. She said Beth Phoenix.
Yeah.
Like, we, and when I say we, Wade, I'm not indicting you specifically, but that era of, like, Bella Twins, Beth Phoenix, Maryse, Caitlyn, Melina, like, it's one to kind of look funny on because there was, like, a lot of moving pieces and a lot of smoke and mirrors during that period. But there's like a whole generation of women who like grew up on that, who wrestled because of that. It's the craziest thing.
Yep.
And like, but they're like super athletes. So it's like, oh, okay. But no, yeah, he makes a great point. I do think that like Kevin Owens almost seems like a slam dunk in AEW. But again, I bring you back to the not even the four pillars. Whoever you would put in the next four pillars, those men and women are genuinely concerned about how much you want these WWE wrestlers to come in. I just really want to reiterate that because they're supposed to be next, and you're telling them to wait another year, 2 years, 4 years to get their thing going when you've been telling them how good they are the whole time. So just, yeah, think about it in terms of how you should think about a business. But, yeah. I agree with what he's saying. I think that Kevin Owens can come in there hot, can do damage. I just think 3 hours of TV a week, you really need to keep that in mind. I think AEW is running a really good show in a decently tight ship. You only watch YouTube for so much. Just let them do their thing and don't try to add too many layers to the cake that you already want to eat.
All right, we'll move now to Kyle in Baltimore and then Greg in Kansas City on deck. Kyle, good to hear from you. You've got the eavesdrop on everything we said so far. You can bring up your own topic or respond to anything else. How are you doing?
I'm good. Yeah, so I would talk about the whole with Liv Morgan herself. And this is really the first time I heard anything from Liv start to finish. It was a full like, promo from her from this match. Yeah. It was like a cool thing. And watching this, I was thinking back to SmackDown with Toni Storm and how different it is. And I, after rewatching it from last week from Toni Storm and Charlotte, it wasn't that good what Toni did. And it feels like to me what Liv did tonight is what Toni should have done last week. And yeah. I find it fascinating too that people saw Toni Storm as being this top star and Liv Morgan was the next big thing. But, and then Liv Morgan, people didn't really give a second thought because of her, because of the way she's been booked on TV the last few years, and Toni Storm is kind of different. So, I find that fascinating. And what I like from Liv, she just said that, you know, to Becky said, how does it feel knowing that you become everything that you despise? And that part of Liv, from Liv was like true, because everything that Becky is doing, Becky didn't like when she was the baby face of being always talking down on Charlotte, being the thing you were always always taking the spot, always being champion, always all that other stuff. So I'm kind of glad that Liv gave it back to Becky like that. It was a cool moment. And then the match itself from that, was a 10-minute tag, whatever. That was a good match as well, with the whole fact that Liv put Becky down, and it was a cool moment. She was kind of and was standing tall heading to next week. So I guess my thing is that with the match next week, I see some type of unfinished, and then that match will try to expand that to day one, which will be interesting how they will do, especially doing the triple threat match, which I kind of expected with Rollins, Owens, and Big E. Got to hype that up all through next month, hit it to the first. I think they'll try to do the same thing with Becky and Liv. What do you think? But that's my thoughts about that.
Go ahead, Cam. What do you think?
Huh. I love that us being from different places and different backgrounds, we all have a different way of saying BS. We think that the finish is going to be funny regardless. Yeah, it's, again, Becky hasn't lost a singles match in 3 years. Is that a way to make a moment? For sure. I don't know if they've gassed Liv up enough to make it happen in the moment. I think it's a pay-per-view thing that has to happen. Okay. So Toni Storm and how she's dealing with Charlotte is great. And then you let her get two pies in her face. Like, it's so uneven. And I think that I understand not making both challengers look like they have the ups and ups on both champions at the same time, but just kind of a weak way to build it to me. But yeah, I do see a non-finish next week. Hopefully they run it back on January 1st. But yeah, I think it's too soon. She just kind of got under her skin. It's too fresh. I think Liv probably gets the Royal Rumble shot, but is not beat Becky. It's for somebody bigger, at least in the moment.
All right, Doc, Kyle, back to you.
Yeah, I know that it's to the point with people like Liv and with Becky herself being the star that she is, I feel like the only person as of right now I can see as a major threat, I guess, for Becky is Rhea Ripley and Bianca Belair, but she may have been played out for a while. So I can see Rhea the face Becky at some point. That'll be something that I've been pretty interested in. They had that one match in NXT,
yeah,
and they never really came back from that. So they will have out. And now that Rhea lost the tattoo titles, I want a Rhea-Becky feud in the future. So that'll be something they'll do next year. So we'll see if that happens. And you talk about Seth and Becky themselves and how they've been coming out lately. It's fascinating that Becky does come out with Coach now, like just like Rollins has been doing, and now it's like oh, okay, so they're really being doing this same thing without even. Also, too, I didn't really realize that two of them coming out at the same time. They did it 2 weeks ago too, to come out the same segment at the next segment at. Before them, so that is interesting. But I don't know if I want to see that again. They have good with them being apart right now. I don't want them be coming together again, because I think what we're doing separately is working. And with Seth himself, I think he should win the WWE Championship, because Big E lately hasn't really been all that like great right now as champ. It's so fascinating, because to me, I feel like Raw itself is the better show and SmackDown is just the Roman Reigns show. But Roman Reigns has been the most dominant champion, but Big E hasn't really been done anything as champion, and Ross has been doing some good work on the mic, and then his character is awesome, which I think he probably will win the title at that day one, probably. Hopefully, I'm thinking about that now. And so why is it you think that for some reason, because I still feel this way, that Raw is the most better show or book show since the draft happened than SmackDown, because SmackDown is like only just the Roman Reigns, Sasha Banks show, and Raw is about everyone else that they're building up with Liv Morgan and having stuff with Big E as champion and having, you know, that's just how I feel that every single week watching Raw, so I don't know.
Yeah, I think what we saw with the draft, Kyle and Cameron, tell me if you think you agree with this, is a lot of commentary that pointed towards, from the Raw side, that they wanted to portray to fans, but I also think perhaps NBC Universal, USA Network, that Raw is not the B show. If it is, it's very close to the A show. We are strengthening it. We are fortifying it. We are rededicating ourselves to making this feel like a flagship that you have to watch. And it gained and earned, to use Edge's language, it earned a bad reputation with a lot of what they were doing, and it was stagnant. It doesn't feel stagnant now. It doesn't mean all the, you know, glitches in Vince's approach are gone. It's not a massive overhaul, but it feels more relevant, and it feels like they're putting more effort into it. There's more just a sense of granular effort to segment by segment now. The way that the show opened, the energy level in that opening 17 minutes from the segment to the match with Balor and Seth, it reminded me of when Raw and Nitro were head-to-head, and it was just like, we're just trying to get your attention. We're going to just not let you breathe for even a second, and we're going to add all this energy. And it just continued. You know, the show didn't have a ton of downtime. So I think the answer to Kyle's question is Vince McMahon is dedicated to it. He's paying attention to it. It looks like it's a child of his that is getting attention after being more or less ignored for a while. Relative to the excitement of the shiny new toy, which was the Fox deal. I think he wants, and I think AEW has sparked it, by the way. I think the demographic wins are embarrassing. There's major newspaper working on a story right now on AEW versus WWE that I talked to the reporter about, and they've had other write-ups too. So, Cameron, I think that's what's happening. I think they felt like they let it slide, and it's Raw is the legacy brand show, and SmackDown is the A show, but Raw is getting newfound attention from Vince because he finally realized he needed to do it.
Rollins and Balor and Owens and Bianca, and especially Vince. Like, I think, yeah, they're absolutely putting forth their best foot.
They're good performers. Like, they're good performers getting to do good stuff. I mean, say too well about Seth's character, but, you know, maybe you like it, maybe you don't. But, like, you can tell there's talented people getting TV time to really try to establish these are must-watch segments.
100%. They're putting, like, and again, I think that if you had a hierarchy, I think, and Becky, I didn't say Becky, I apologize. But, yeah, I think Roman, as far as, like, a full-timer, is their top talent. But Becky's right there. Seth is right there. Balor's right there. Like, no, they definitely strengthen Raw on that side to make you want to watch it. And then you have a Big E who has been good and good and good and good, but they've always wanted him to be more. You have Kevin Owens over there. I think they've definitely fortified Raw. Like, no doubt about that. And I do feel like it was tighter. Again, I disagree with some of the very specific content, but you have Edge delivering it, number one, and Liv Morgan, who you think is going to be a top babyface, delivering it. So absolutely. Like, they're refortifying that side. SmackDown has the benefit of being a tight two-hour show based on their best character. Like, that's really where it thrives. Raw has to do more work because Raw has some making up to do because of what it's been, but you put a bunch of your top talents over there to do top talent things. Like, don't let me sell short Randy Orton, who, Wade, I don't know if you've, like, gone into the numbers, but, like, of course monthly pay-per-views, like, accentuate this, but Randy Orton and Natalya being their division's respective most complete performers now is like, oh, okay, like, it makes sense. It sounds crazy at first, but you're like, no, Randy's been around 20 years and with monthly pay-per-views and having the IC title early and having the WWE title for a long time. Like, okay, I get it. Natalya was, again, I've said this before, them letting go of Ruby the former Ruby Riott, now Ruby Soho, and the former, well, now Athena, gosh, Ember Moon, I'm sorry. Ember Moon, while she was there, I thought that they were going to be the glue of that division for a long, long time. But now those people being like the all-time tenured people in their division, it's like, oh, okay, like I get it. Like this has been going and going and going. But yeah, they've really fortified the Raw side with the very best talent they have on the roster to make it stand out. Yeah.
Becky and Seth coming together on air, I think is worth considering, and it might even be on their radar already. If Seth becomes champion while Becky is champion, I think there's some money and some equity in them, in the chemistry that they would have on screen together, especially because their acts don't conflict with each other. Mm-hmm. I think there's something, you know, if they're married, there's something about them that not every married couple is charismatic together, but they would have not every married couple has charisma and chemistry. Mm-hmm. I think Becky and Seth would, and I think it has to be as heels. And so part of me is kind of curious how that would go. I think it would help elevate Seth, and they could be wrestling superpower couple in a way that we just haven't really seen before in that form.
And let me know about the timeline, Wade, because you'll know about this better than I will. But I do feel like there was a time where Triple H and China were Triple H and China, but were also doing their own thing. Was there some crossover there?
Yeah. But I think there was, but I don't know. I don't think that – I think Seth and Becky have potential to be bigger than that, in that Becky is so established and Seth is so established as top-tier centerpiece main eventers at world title level that then if they come together after making it on their own and, you know, because China had an aspect to her that was a novelty. And so with Becky and Seth, they're made, and they made themselves on their own independently, and then they come together – and it could be interesting. So it's something I think that, you know, 6 months ago I might have, and most people might have had a different thought on, and maybe I'll run a Twitter poll on that, just kind of get a little snapshot of at least what one segment of the audience would think of that. But I'm intrigued by it.
I would love one promo explaining, and again, this is just for me, not for everybody else, but like explaining why Seth went so crazy on Ray when he congratulated him on being a dad. Like, just acknowledge that for a second, and I'll be good, for sure.
All right, Kyle, appreciate your call. Did I ask, do you have a closing word, or are you done with us for tonight?
About the whole Becky Rollins thing that they had that back in 2019. I know a lot of people didn't like that. I personally liked it when the time they were, when they put them on screen. At first, I liked them, and then it started to become more, it was more siding towards Becky, and Rollins was getting all the heat from it because people like Becky and didn't care for Rollins at that point. So if they do it again in this way, I'll be intrigued because people still like Becky and people don't want to really want to boo Becky still. I get the sense of that. And then with Rollins, he is a heel and he does get generally booed, but I think people do like. I think people are kind of sick of Big E, so just by default, he'll get cheered because people don't really like Big E that much as champion. So I don't know if they do that. That will be interesting. I will like it, but I think how will the fans will feel about it because even though Becky's a heel, people still love Becky. She still gets cheered still, even though it's kind of.
I wonder if being.
I don't know.
Kyle, I wonder if being with Seth would help solve that. You know, what do you think, Cam? If they got together, maybe that helps Becky get booed because Seth is so obnoxious. You think it goes the other way and people start cheering Seth and then the crowd just goes against the grain?
I think that I'm not saying he's at late contract Kurt Angle levels, but I do feel like Seth is so good that I don't think being next to him will get you booed. I really don't. And I think, you know, the guy from last week, I know you don't know who Mario Judah is, Wade. I don't expect you to. But the guy who attacked Seth last week and Seth handling it in the perfect way, I think fights off the idea that Seth is going to be hated. I think that Seth is this consummate professional that does whatever his company asks him to in a way that a comparable talent like a Shawn Michaels necessarily couldn't. And so Seth will get booed in the context of, I'm supposed to boo you during this match, but I don't think that putting somebody next to Seth will make them less in the eyes of the audience. I do not think so.
Sure. Yeah. All right, Kyle. Good talking to you, as always.
Yeah, you too. For me, lastly, I'll just cheer Bulls because I'm fans of Bulls people here, but that's just me. But I'll cheer for them. But that's it. This roll call.
All right. Cool. Thanks. Yeah. But she insult if they insult your hockey team, we'll see how that goes. All right. we'll go to Greg in Kansas City. Thanks for holding, Greg. Good to hear from you again. What you think about tonight?
Say, and I'll start out, Wade. You noticed, once again, elaborating on last week, you know, Otis didn't get an entrance this week. I mean, so definitely.
Oh. Otis as a title, being built up into a title single threat is over, and he is now a mid-card tag team wrestler, and I don't know what happened. I will ask around, but I do feel we are confirmed that is the case now, Greg.
Yeah, and it's one of those head-scratching things with WWE that people point out all the time. Things get built up, and then just nothing happens with it. But, I mean, this is one of many examples, and there will be many more. I tell you what, guys, there's a lot to talk about between the conversation you and Nick had on Friday night and the conversation tonight with you and Cameron. And I will say that one thing, WWE post-shows to me tend to be a lot more interesting than AEW post-shows because there's more to talk about, I think, on a critical perspective with the WWE post-shows. I mean, like, I think it's pretty – among, like, the types of people who follow things like The Torch, I think there would probably be a belief that AEW probably does more things right than WWE. So it makes the WWE post-show conversation, I think, more interesting for that reason. And to follow up on the conversation – aspects of the conversation with Nick on Friday and then the conversation with Cameron, that's one thing I appreciate is the different perspectives that are brought to these post shows with the different hosts and the different perspective brought onto things. I mean, I thought Nick made some solid points with the way the characters need to. There is some responsibility on the role of the performers to grab the horns, basically, and do the best with what they have. And I was thinking about that with regards to Liv Morgan, and I think she got more to work with than she did the last couple of weeks, although I think there's still aspects that are counterproductive of that. And to go back to one thing that Cameron brought up, and I'm not going to defend that line. I thought the line of, like, Liv Morgan blaming Becky Lynch's contract on a Vince McMahon, Nick Khan business decision to fire her friends, you know, on one hand, you know, Becky has been playing into, like, you know, she's big time. She gets all the money and stuff. So, I mean, that's one aspect of where you could maybe try to do a little bit of justification for Liv throwing that line there. But ultimately, it was not a – I agree that it wasn't a good line. But I feel that tonight I feel on a more solid footing with Liv Morgan in terms of her trajectory. But as I've been saying, it's all about where she goes after the feud with Becky Lynch is over. So that's the big question. I'm not convinced that there's a long-term investment in her.
Yeah, let me say this real quick, and I just want to – I know we're going to keep going, but I think that Liv Morgan delivering that line, if anything, it's like, I wish my friends still worked here. And I think that when you can draw emotion from whatever's written for you because you care about somebody, it's going to hit. Like, again, my biggest thing with this, it's a dumb line and a disingenuous line, but it had the exact desired effect because she delivered it amazing. Like, it was perfect. You know, it's certainly not a knock on her. I just hate baby faces being put in a position to all of a sudden defend the company. Like, when Rock said, get the F out, who was that for? It wasn't for me. You know what I mean? Like, I know how businesses work at this point as an adult, and you're not saying that. So, like, you don't really want me to not like Stone Cold. You want me to like WWE. I'm going to like watching wrestling. Give me the good wrestling, and you can have some money. I'm not going to be loyal to a company who doesn't care about me. Oh, never. Mm-mm. Never then.
Yeah, go ahead, Greg.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, I agree with you. But the line, I can see, like, Liv very much missing her friends with the with regards to that. And I think that's something WWE's got to be careful with over time. And I don't know if Vince has – I don't know if the company has the ability at this point to keep its performers happy, because I imagine there have to be a lot of people. You know, they put on good face. I'm sure they genuinely enjoy their jobs, but I would think from a psychological level, there are some people who are feeling a little, you know, that aren't happy about, like, the prospects of what's happened with some of their friends. And once again, we could have a Nick Barbati conversation, how much of that goes to the company, how much that goes to the performers. But I'm sure that sticks in the minds, even if it's not on the surface of a lot of performers. I'm sure, you know, Liv Morgan's one of those. She misses her best friend dearly. And, I mean, the line was, very counter, very counterproductive. And I guess for my call here, I will finish my just by going back to what I've gone back to the last several weeks, is that it's interesting now that, like, as I've been talking about for a while, it's interesting now that you've got more women, more female stars being used in programs right now, but it's going to be all about this follow-up. I think Liv Morgan's in a much better position than Toni Storm was in after that, what I thought was a terrible segment on, going to be all about the follow-up. And I guess we're going to find out in the next 4 to 5 weeks, 4 to 6 weeks or so, if there's any serious effort to try to actually push new stars in this, more so even the men's division, in the women's division, or if this is just to give the who are seen as the top stars something to do before WrestleMania season gets here. That's going to be very interesting in the coming, I'd say, 4 to 6, maybe to 8 weeks or so. And I'll end this call by just saying once again, thank you for the different perspectives, and I appreciate what the different hosts bring to the table on these post shows. So thank you, guys.
Awesome. I appreciate the kind words. Great to hear from you again, Greg. Anything you want to add to that, Cam?
No. I appreciate what he's saying as well. I think that, you know, one thing we are getting is different characters. Like, yeah. Toni Storm is not Sasha Banks. Liv Morgan is not Rhea Ripley. So definitely credit for them being a little bit different. But please don't make these new characters look foolish to keep your top stars established, because they can't be top stars forever. Because if you look at Becky and Charlotte's run, they've had, between them, Bayley, and Sasha, they've had significantly longer runs than most women in that level of the title picture on that hierarchy have had. So don't make the next one look silly, because you're probably leaning toward the next one soon. So, yeah.
All right, let's wrap up with some mailbag here. Zach in Texas emailed and said, what was that Becky Lynch-Liv Morgan promo? Becky gets a huge pop and then proceeds to cut a not very heelish promo until she heals on the town and local sports teams to get the absolute cheapest heat possible, except for referencing Miz, I added that, because the people who wrote the promo are desperate to get her boot. Liv, the babyface, mocks the Becky for getting legitimately emotional after her Survivor Series match. How was that a babyface move? That was week two. I'm interjecting that, Cam. She caps a promo off by blaming Becky for the talent releases. WWE actually turned them legitimately firing talent into part of an angle, which is disgusting. That promo was a mess. The 10-woman tag, woof, of her partners, the only one Becky should have been associating with is Piper Niven, and that would be if they were calling her Piper Niven instead of the name I will not use. Liv got to pin Tamina, who took the worst oblivion I've ever seen, and then hit it on Becky for the obligatory babyface gets one over on the heel before the heel wins the title match. Is there anyone who doesn't think Becky is going to get a pop when she pins Liv next week? Maybe after the Liv match, they can course correct, because this heel turn ain't working even a little. I will say in context, Zach has been consistently against the Becky heel turn and often writes about how it's not working. Do you agree with that? Where are you, Cam, compared to where you were when she first turned heel, on whether it's a lot of effort, a lot of wasted effort, or a lot of effort that's working maybe a little better than you thought, but it's still not worth doing it, or are they succeeding? Where are you on this?
One, I'm taking at least 43% of the credit for Zach Haydorn being in the position he's in. You're welcome, Zach. I love you. Outside of that, I think when they brought Becky back as not cheating to win, but outsmarting to win, you're automatically creating a situation where people are not going to boo her in the way that you want. Maybe they're just not going to. I don't think that Liv has established enough as a singles or a tag team wrestler to have audiences say, this is who we're rolling with. They're going to have to do more. So yeah, if Becky beats her, I think it's just going to be par for the course and they'll keep going. Liv has to put up a very, very strong showing next week. It needs to look like Liv should have beat her a few times in order for everybody to come out on top, because they're going, again, just like an email, they're going to react to Becky the way that you want them to. It's going to have to be strong. That's just it.
I'm looking up the city that they're in next week. Corpus Christi. Is that right?
Yeah. So, fun story.
No, that's Sunday, December 5th. I'm sorry. I'm a day off. I got my date.
Well, that is, yeah, that's Sunday. I think they're in San Antonio on Monday, as a matter of fact.
That sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah. No, Corpus is one of my favorite cities because way back in 2001, Wade, in the high school playoffs, we beat Corpus Christi Carroll by 2 touchdowns. We weren't even supposed to touch them. It was great. My man had 3 interceptions. Yeah. And then San Antonio.
And they're in Memphis, by the way.
My sister lives in Memphis. It's fine. I got connections everywhere. Yeah.
I don't want people to start driving, packing their bags to go to San Antonio a weekend.
Please go to San Antonio. It'll be great. I might be there next week. It'll be great.
So I don't know how Memphis is going to feel about Becky versus Liv compared to other cities, but a lot of, he brought up, mocking Becky for the emotions. And I agree with that. Like I said, I think her performance was good. The material wasn't good. In some instances, it was good. In other instances, it was a step forward for Liv, but there was, going full circle back to earlier conversations on this show, I think WWE does, in their writing, show a lack of awareness for what is going to resonate versus turn off their audience to the goals that Vince McMahon and the writers and the wrestlers have. And mocking Becky, showing real emotion, I was like, whoa, I kind of, if I was on video, I was like, did they think that was going to work for her? Because that airing that felt like a real moment, that Becky was really emotional about a friendship that had gone awry. So many people could relate to that. And she was in tears over what had become of a friendship. And it wasn't a heelish moment. And I'm surprised they decided to go there. I think they wanted to do shoot style. I can't believe they went there with that comments. To the detriment of some of the greater purpose that they had in both of their promos. Edge and Miz.
Did Goldberg make fun of The Rock for getting emotional after facing Austin at WrestleMania 19? No, he didn't. Like, we don't make fun of the men on the roster for getting emotional. So why don't make fun of the women?
Yeah. All right, let's see. Covered extensively. JB in Detroit. I'm not sure how much of the proverbial rub Vince is giving to Austin Theory. I'd actually contest that Vince is hurting any cool factor Theory could potentially be garnering on his own. These segments the last 2 weeks come across as lame, and Vince seems more like the ornery dad rather than the powerful, booming leader we previously knew. He loves you, by the way, JB, because you called him a dad and not a granddad. The strength and there's anything wrong with granddads, just Vince is, vain enough. He's like, I want to be a dad, not a granddad. The strength in his voice just isn't quite there anymore, and he doesn't look intimidating at all. I think the real – give him a break. He's in his 70s. Anyway, I think the real push that Theory needs is looking dominant in the ring. Secondly, I really like the video package they did with Lashley talking about his real-life amateur wrestling background, success growing up, and his WWE history. It came across as raw, real, and honestly – a little different than typical WWE, acknowledging and embracing history. Finally, is this the first time WWE has added a surname to a wrestler, with Veer getting Mahan added to his Coming to Raw video package? Love the show, and go VIP, everybody. PWTorch.com/goVIP. So a number of things there, but the key thing that made me want to read this email is the idea that are they hobbling Theory's upside by making him into a goof instead of more cool? They're lean, because I had this concern in NXT, but I thought Theory was going to be in NXT for a while, and they bring him up slowly, and instead they're bringing him in, but it is a little more comedic and light and a little Greg from Succession, just kind of this dopey innocent guy. But I don't want to spoil too much with Succession, so fast forward anybody if you're behind or into it, but I think this has been talked about in general terms from the beginning. Greg looked like somebody who maybe is going to become wise to the nonsense he's surrounded by and mature into a more serious character. And with Theory, they could take him on that journey too, where, he's kind of a goof and, he's sort of, he can be pushed around and manipulated and bullied as Vince was doing, but eventually the fans go on a journey with him to where he grows a spine, basically. And then breaks away, and there's a moment, kind of like we didn't get with Mizdow and Miz in time for it to explode, where the lackey goes, I'm not taking this crap anymore, and stands up for himself, and there's a big pop. So I think it could work. What do you think, Ken?
Yeah, I think what we forget is, and not we, Wade, but I mean just while you're watching, Big E is 35, and I think of Big E as a young main eventer. And, we've done the Austins, the Roxy, Triple H's, the Kurt Angles. So we know that, 35 doesn't make you an old main eventer, but Austin Theory is 24. Like, with whatever mistakes they make, there's enough time to fix whatever they do. He can absolutely recover and come up from this thing because who do you got? You got Rock, Brock, Randy. Who else was like an established main eventer at that young of an age, like before 30? It's so few guys. Like even Roman was like touching 30 or in that area there by the time he got there. So, yeah, I think that there's room for error with him. Like we watched Drew step away for years and kind of find himself again and really be established as a main eventer. So, yeah, I think there's plenty of time with Theory. Even with the mistakes that they make, he can recover from those in that amount of time. I do think it's a thing where he establishes himself as very serious, puts on the good matches he's been putting on, and he is a solidified main eventer here pretty soon. Like, I'm not super high on the guy because I still think that some of his talking is based off of things somebody 5 years younger than him would say. But could I see Austin Theory with the WWE title in 2 years? For sure. Just because they got to get somebody new in the mix here pretty soon. And who's new that I think they trust outside of him? Yeah.
Anything else from that email jump out to you?
Not particularly.
I think we covered the Lashley thing and the last name.
Again, so to reiterate, if you weren't listening earlier, I think Vince has always wanted that strong black All-American main eventer. Lashley is his very best shot outside of Rock and Bianca. And so, and Lashley's worked over the last year, a great heel run. I think there's a face run in Lashley that they missed in 06 that they want to recapture. So for sure.
Sure. Yep. All right, cool. Well, anything else from the show, Cam? We kind of let the callers and emailers lead the way. Was there anything else you made a note of that we didn't? Orton and Riddle we didn't talk about at all.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
I think that there is a very strong Orton and Riddle feud brewing. I think it might not happen until the summer. I think WrestleMania is too soon. But Randy, has held on this long. I always said, Wade, the biggest strength that Randy Orton and Jeff Hardy ever had was still looking like Randy Orton and Jeff Hardy 20 years after the fact. And I mean so many, you've done this way longer than I have. You've watched guys who were great in their day who 10 years from then did not look like themselves anymore. You know, science changes, nutrition changes, whatever, but those guys look great for their time. I think that if they really think that Riddle is going to be a guy for them, if you look at Riddle and Velveteen, when they were feuding, Riddle had a mean streak about him that was just different. I think if he pulls that out against Randy Orton, you got a new star made right there. And so, yeah, them retaining the tag titles, it's like the buddy cop movie. That eventually dies. I think there's a strong feud, a strong program there with those guys a bit later. And I think that, again, Big E retains on technicalities, and we go from there. I really think so.
All right. Very good. Thank you, Cameron. How can people follow you, if they didn't make note of it earlier, on social media?
For sure. It's Seahawk, C-E-E-H-A-W-K. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. Most recent stuff, if you go to Big Gold Belt Media, you will see myself and a bunch of other content creators at New York Comic Con talking about the beauty of Black and Pro Wrestling. If you go back to the August edition of Pro Wrestling Illustrated, it's a conversation with myself and Alley Catch. Big thing I'm trying to do over the next month or two, Wade, I do want to interview a bunch of people who are going to be at the GCW show in Hammerstein. I think that's a super huge deal. So look out for those conversations coming up. But, yeah, Seahawk, C-E-E-H-A-W-K. And, of course, every Wednesday, 6:30 Eastern, 5:30 Central, EastCoastCast.com. Travis Bryant, myself, and Rich Fan, East Coast Cast, talking about the week in wrestling.
Very good. Follow me on Twitter, at TheWadeKeller. Follow our brand, at PW Torch, and subscribe to our YouTube channel at PW Torch also if you haven't yet. We'll probably be adding some new content there soon, dusting it off a little bit, been in the works for a while, and we might finally pull the trigger on that. So, you know what? I want to ask you one more thing.
Uh-oh.
Vince McMahon and Austin Theory, where is that going? What expect the unexpected? I thought there would be a payoff at the end of the show. It feels like it's more of a long-term story, but very specifically, and I'm glad I remember to ask you this, because is it really a long story arc, or is it building up to something you expect to happen like next week?
Have you seen Austin Theory's haircut, Wade?
Yeah.
Remember when Vince said he had a son, and it turned out to be Hornswoggle, but he sent all the black guys to the back because it couldn't be them? I'm thinking Vince may have been lying. Why does Austin Theory have the best fade on the show? It's super ridiculous. No, in all seriousness, I think that I see something similar to Drew, and that Austin Theory is the chosen one, and then he's all of a sudden pushed to the top as a way of shaking things up. I think it's a way of saying my young talent looks better, moves better, talks better than your young talent, and I'm going to establish that. Yeah, I think he's a plot tool. Ain't nothing wrong with being a plot tool in WWE or in wrestling in general, because that'll get you some money. But, yeah, I think that Austin Theory is sought out as the next guy, because you don't do this goofy stuff they're doing without a plan. The egg. What if Austin Theory versus The Rock was booked just to make Roman mad for another 6 months?
What if?
Oh, my goodness. I'm being ridiculous.
All right. Cam, thanks again. We'll wrap up on that note. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We've got our post shows coming up on Dynamite and SmackDown later in the week, and a flagship over on the Wade Keller Processing post show. So search Wade Keller to get all our free podcasts. Subscribe to the Red Brand and the Blue Brand. And also, while you're at it, subscribe to the PW Torch Daily Cast. Search PW Torch, and also the East Coast Cast, the PW Torch East Coast Cast with Travis Bryant and Cameron Hawkins, and then also get the VIP exclusive version of that with Rich Fan. Thanks again, Cam. We'll talk to you soon.
Yes, sir.